Welcome, everybody, to Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we will take an in-depth and closer look at this beloved television series, the spin-offs, the merchandising, and the global phenomenon that has shaped the landscape of science fiction for over five decades and counting. So step into our TARDIS and please enjoy our journey together here on Type 40, and we will try to avoid kerblam deliveries during this show. But you know what? We got a great episode of Doctor Who to talk about, but I can't pilot the Type 40 alone. It takes more than just me, and it would be boring if it was just me. So once again, joining me as he does, because I think he just really likes the biscuit dispenser more than anything, but Mr. Dan Hadley is back on Type 40.
Yes, back again. Still no Jaffa cakes, though. I'm not too keen on these custard creams. I'm putting a suggestion in the suggestion box for next time. Jaffa cakes, please, instead.
Since I have no idea what those are, you...
Oh, no! Oh, yeah. At Twitter, at Type 40, tell Kai what Jaffa cakes are. There you go.
There you go. And, of course, returning once again, the queen of time. Of course, she is also on the alert at right there at the epicenter of everything that is Doctor Who right now in Sheffield, the one... the only Sarah Graham, and I promise you she's not popping the bubble wrap.
No, definitely not. Hi, Kyle. Hi, Dan. Thank you for having me back.
Oh, always. You know, there's always room in the TARDIS, and I am working on a snowball dispenser for
you. Oh, thank you. He knows what snowballs are.
What? Yeah, well, we have those here, so.
Oh, I thought you meant not the alcoholic drink. You mean the... I was gonna say, that's a bit hardcore for the TARDIS.
I was going to say, with you two, I might need an alcohol dispenser before the episode's over, but...
Yeah, it does get like that sometimes, doesn't it? Okay.
Well, before we get too off the rails here, let me tell you where you can find not only Type 40, but all the great shows here on the Fandom Podcast Network. And it all starts with the master feed on our homepage at fpnet.podbean.com, where you find our master feed and archives for all of our great shows. If you're mobile, you can also use the Podbean app. Just search Fandom Podcast Network, or you can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher. If you're an Android user, you can find us on Google Play, and now you can find us on Spotify as well. Again, just look up Fandom Podcast Network, and you'll find all the great shows here at the FPNet. Of course, if you want to follow us on social media, you can follow us on Instagram at Type 40 Doctor Who. That's T-Y-P-E 40-D-R-W-H-O. And, of course, I visit the Type 40 Facebook page at Type 40 at Doctor Who Fandom. You can email us at Type40DoctorWho@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Type40DoctorWho or on Instagram at Type40DoctorWho. Of course, I'm Kyle. You can find me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom. Dan, where can people find you on the social media these days?
All over Facebook. I spend far too much time on Facebook, I think, and normally talking about Doctor Who as well. Yeah, but come and find me in the Type 40 Facebook group. Always something new to talk about, you know, whether it's the history of Doctor Who or what's going on right now. And plenty of other fans, friends of the show like you maybe. And yeah, come and find us, come and have a chat there. Even more so going on in a group called the Space Book, which I've been running for the last 3-4 years. Where we talk about all those other movies and TV shows that geeks like us tend to like.
Wait, there's other movies and TV shows out there?
What are you talking about? So they say. Yeah, so there's always something kicking off in there. Whatever's big at the cinema, somebody's been to see it, somebody's talking about it. Or whatever your favourite show is, it's somebody else's favourite show too. So there's lots of conversation there. Or I'm on Instagram, Dan Hadley, _. Few pictures, whatever takes my fancy there. Whatever pops out of my mind. There you go.
It's a scary place too. I've seen a glimpse. It's a little scary. But Sarah, where can people find you on social media so they can hear your great musings?
You can find me in the Type 40 group. I'm sure a lot of the listeners are already familiar with me from there. You can also find me in the Doctor Who Company Facebook group. I also run the Doctor Who Company page, and that's full of, again, photos and articles and any bits of Doctor Who news. I'm also on Instagram at EdenStar85. And I'm also on Twitter at StarryEyedGirl11. But I had to think then. It's been a while since I've been on Twitter.
Oh, it gets a little tweety around here, but don't worry about it. Now, of course, too, if you want to listen to the Fandom Podcast Network, you need to have the proper gear. And you find that at our TeePublic store at teepublic.com. And you search the Fandom Podcast Network, you can find mugs, t-shirts, hats, you name it, they've got it. Check it out. Again, teepublic.com, search Fandom Podcast Network. And lastly, we always love to hear your reviews, especially on iTunes. So feel free to go to iTunes, find Fandom Podcast Network, and leave us a review. Let us know what you think of what we're doing right now. If you leave us a review, we'll read it on the air, and hey, you never know what could happen. But with that, it's time to talk some Doctor Who, and with that, there's supposed to talk about some, I don't know if we can call this news, Dan, or if it's rumors, but it's a pretty big rumor that's floating around out there, and that is a rumor that after the next season of Doctor Who, that Chris Chibnall and Jodie Whittaker could be leaving Doctor Who after this.
Yeah, I think we've got to definitely state that these are rumors before we get sort of chased down. But yeah, definitely rumors. But they did break from the same source at the same time as those rumors that were confirming we were going to get series 12 next autumn. So there's definitely a connection there. My guess is that there's no smoke without fire, and we're not likely, you know, we know what the current situation is with Doctor Who. Chris Chibnall is keeping tighter than tight-lipped on even the most positive of things that are going on there. So if we do find out, if there is some truth in this, if we do find any of it out, it'll be very, very late in the day. My guess is that, there is no smoke without fire. And there's been a lot of blowback over this series of Doctor Who. You know, probably the biggest negative press they've had has been over the Christmas special, the New Year special. People don't like that being moved. But, you know, the new Doctor, I'm sad to say, as much as people who do like her will continually tell us how much they love her, she is proving divisive. The new scripts are generally accepted to be underperforming, underdeveloped. Ratings have, there's no doubt about it, ratings have been falling. You know, we all expected the big number first week, but you know, yeah, they were never going to stay right the way through. But the fact is, three or four million people less are watching it now than they were just a few weeks ago. That's going to have been noticed. So if it's true that Chris Chibnall's unhappy with the BBC and the way things are going, you know, he's not the only one. The BBC's getting a lot of bad press at the moment. And, you know, from what I gather from people I know who work there, you know, it may be deserved.
Yeah. Now, I think one of the more interesting things that I always thought when they announced that Chris Chibnall was coming to run Doctor Who was when he left, he really didn't want to, because they've tried to get him before to be more involved in Doctor Who, and he's always kind of resisted. And then he finally came in, and I think it was under some circumstances that he finally wanted, but he still never felt like he really wanted to be here. So my question to you is, Sarah, do you think that maybe part of the reason why we've had this issue is that Chibnall really doesn't want to be part of Doctor Who, but it was just one of those things, the prestige of it?
Yeah, I do. He's a pretty wise man, you know, he's a pretty intelligent man, and he knows what this fandom's like and what this show's like. I mean, previously written for it before, and maybe it just wasn't what he wanted to do in terms of running it. But you know, he's a long-term fan of the show. I mean, he's been watching since he was a child. Maybe he did. The temptation of being able to influence things and direct where things are going and put his own stamp on it and get his friends in as well, because, you know, we know Jodie's a close personal friend, Bradley is. That might have just proved too irresistible for him. But yeah, he doesn't seem overly enthusiastic about it. And I do know that he really didn't like the Christmas specials. So I do think a lot of that was his doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to tie this into it too, because obviously Jody has made it very clear if Chibnall leaves, she's out. I'm starting to see, though, and I want to get both of your opinions on this, but Sarah, I want to start with you. We've had a couple episodes now that Chris Chibnall did not write, and we've noticed that there's a fairly good difference between what Chibnall has written and what's been written by other people. You think this is another indication that maybe the BBC is also going to start opening their eyes and go, whoa, wait a minute?
Yeah, it's unavoidable, really. I mean, the quality of the stories kind of stand for themselves, and Chibnall does seem to have got this thing where he is a good writer. He's very good at writing drama and emotional, like melodrama, but he just can't seem to write decent sci-fi. The ideas are there, but the way they've been executed, it doesn't seem to have come together. Maybe the first episode, but after that, there's definitely been a decline.
Yeah. Well, what do you think on that, Dan? Do you think that maybe the BBC is starting to see this? Because there's been a lot of praise, including the episode we're going to talk about today of Kerblam, of the episodes that Chibnall has not written seem to be being a lot more well-received.
I think that's coincidence at the moment. I think whatever's going on and we're hearing about now, it could have been the case maybe even since before the premiere. But, you know, it's certainly probably been going on for the last few weeks. And the sense of occasion surrounding Doctor Who has sort of, it's changed. And you can see that the publicity machine has sort of tried to keep it high. But Chris Chibnall himself has been, he's not remotely visible. He's not engaging with the public at all. The only time he ever speaks to fandom or to the press, It's usually to have a bit of a pop at the fans, to be truthful. You can understand him standing by his cast. I respect anybody who'd do that. Same with Jodie Whittaker. You know, the quotes that she's given about Chris Chibnall, you know, they're loyal and sweet and professional, the way that you would expect. I'd never knock anybody for that. But there is this sort of, there's something building with this, and I suspect that we'll find out sooner rather than later. If Chris Chibnall goes, I mean, she's been quoted as saying that she doesn't want to work under another showrunner, which I do. You know, I don't like what she's doing, but I'm not sure how much to level at her, how much to level at Chris Chibnall, how much to level at the directors, how much to level at the scripts. I think it would be a pity to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think they've come this far into it that maybe if rules are meant to be broken and Chris Chibnall's this much of a fan of change, then perhaps the lead not leaving with the showrunner might be a good precedent to set as well. But if I was a betting man, I'd say that Jodie Whittaker will leave with Chris Chibnall whenever that happens, so, you know, whether it's sooner or later. I'd say that's a certainty to happen. And, you know, we're even starting to get rumours now about Jodie Whittaker's own reasons for not wanting to commit to the show long term as regards her personal family life and other career aspirations she may have, which, again, is, you know, it's everybody's prerogative. It does make you wonder how serious, how open were her eyes when she took this role on. You know, it's it doesn't have to be all-consuming. But, you know, she knows David Tennant. She knows Matt Smith. I can't believe they didn't have the conversation. And the profile of the show, the integrity of the show, is that should be paramount. And if the BBC are starting to take better care of that and having these conversations with both Chibnall and the lead actress, then, it's better late than never. In my opinion, the BBC have got increasingly complacent with Doctor Who since the 50th anniversary, almost inexcusably so. And I hope that next year marks, whatever happens, whether they stay or go, marks a huge sea change with that. Otherwise, you know, we will be lucky if Doctor Who is still on screen in a regular form come 2023 in the 60th anniversary.
Yeah, I don't think you'll have it removed from regular form on that, but I think there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff, Sarah, that we don't know about right now. I think that's the feeling I'm getting.
There's definitely a lot. Something has happened. I mean, I'd love to be a fly on the wall at the moment because somebody's definitely not happy. And I think a lot of it is to do with Christmas. Just the speed at which we went from no Christmas special to the Christmas special is coming back next year. It was a matter of a couple of days. It was definitely less than a week for that turnaround and for that news to get out. So yeah, something's definitely going on.
Yeah, I kind of think maybe we got a little bit of a power struggle between Chibnall and the BBC right now over the directions being taken. And I think that
it could be
a big factor.
I mean, so. The reason I didn't realise that Chris Chibnall was needed to be coerced quite as much as he did to take this job. And, you know, it's obviously a huge commitment and it can define these guys' careers. Chris Chibnall's been a hugely successful. Nobody's trying to take that away from him. But this particular show at this particular time to sort of come to it with one eye on the door is, you know, it's hard to justify. But playing devil's advocate, the guy has run his own production company very successfully, had international success. Sarah, I'm sure you know, you've heard, you know, people know what the BBC is like, how controlling they are. And the BBC have got a reputation for bullying independent filmmakers and production companies. Just this week, the company that make the Great British Bake Off are very publicly fired massive shots across the BBC about the way they were treated over that show, Red Productions. It's possible, it seems very likely to me, that Chris Chibnall, coming from the independent sector to working within the BBC like this, could be finding that a bit of a squeeze too. And is thinking, you know, I'm best off out of this, fewer people to answer to. You know, too many cooks can spoil the, you know.
No, I think that's a very good point. It's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen over the next several months because they're getting ready to start shooting for the autumn, fall. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if towards the summertime we didn't get some kind of announcement either way. So it will be very interesting. But let's move on to the main topic of this week's show, which is, of course, everybody's favorite delivery service, Kerblam! Now, Pete McTeague's contribution definitely had a unenviable task of following up a very heavy episode from last week. And, you know, he's the creator of the all-conquering prison drama Wentworth, which, you know what, I haven't seen. I'm going off of what Dan has told me is a wonderful show. But
it is.
But like many of the writers that they've had this season, they're lifelong fans. And that's one of the things with the writers, too. We're talking about getting a generation of writers now that grew up with Doctor Who. So I think that's kind of something that's impacting some of the Who stories, but it doesn't mean that their voice can chime in and with that sense in this when they type their episode. Is this a season where each episode seems to be diversive, or could Kablam defy its title to unite fandom just for 50 minutes? Because we've been a little divided, but I gotta say, guys, real quick out of the gate, just the feeling on the episode. This felt like the most Doctor Who episode of the season. Now, Sarah and Dan, I know you both love this, but I got to go ladies first. Sarah, what were your thoughts of Kerblam?
Yes, I absolutely love this. I feel like my faith has been restored at last. It was fun. And I think this is what the first half of this series has been missing. It's gone so much for the more educational, serious social topics, it's forgotten about, you know, its primary thing, which is, you know, it's to entertain, it's to be fun. Yes, I love the kids, absolutely adored it. The exploding weaponized bubble wrap, I mean, it's just a stroke of genius. We've already had them, we had some parcels from a very well-known internet company that isn't Kablam come through our door, and straight away they were into the bubble wrap and pretending to explode. And it's been wonderful to see them play and reenact something from the show. I thought the characters were really good. Even the supporting characters were getting a bit more fleshed out. And it was just lovely to have robots again. And you can't have Doctor Who without robots. So yeah, I've been really excited. And then on top of that, we had the Fez back. And it just, yeah, it all just clicked into place and it just felt, it felt like a continuation of the rest of the show rather than a brand new thing. And I felt quite reassured by that.
Yeah, no, that those are great points. Personally, I think the people who make bubble wrap were paid a lot of money to have this show aired because they're tired of people popping bubble wrap. But Dan, what were your thoughts on this episode?
Huge relief that Doctor Who is sort of back after a couple of months. I wouldn't say I loved it, but I really, really liked this story. It was, as Sarah said, lots of fun. Very, very engaging and energetic. I mean, right from the start, we didn't see the cast standing around in the TARDIS. All four of them were running around and doing something like they wanted to be there, like they were part of something and we were going somewhere. And as much as the story was, generally, you know, pretty much a standard Doctor Who story. You know, it wouldn't have been out of place in the Russell T. Davies era or the Stephen Moffat era. You know, nobody's reinvented the wheel with this. But it was a relief to see some of these cornerstones, some of these calling cards, and some good Doctor Who beats being hit along the way with characters that we, when they're at their best, that we do really, really like. So, yeah, my overall impression is one of huge relief. I did enjoy it. I appreciated the fact that it got this wonderful sort of shape. It felt so complete and so satisfying. So yeah, I'm a thumbs up. Both thumbs up.
Yay.
Well, yeah, it's nice to be able to be on the train positive with you guys both this week. But there's a lot of things that Sarah brought up too that I thought were real key to this episode of Doctor Who, and that was some connective tissue finally, I think, to what we've had before in the past. Obviously, the Fez coming out delivered, and Jodie's doctor being all excited about it and putting it on. And do you think it still suits me? And also the mention of Agatha Christie, which who has played a pretty good role in Doctor Who through the years, especially with the classic episode with the oversized hornet. And you know, it was a great to kind of get that little bit of connective tissue, but not overly done. I mean, and I think the Fez was actually a great thing that made a lot of people kind of maybe exhale a little bit going, okay, it is not something totally new. Sarah, you kind of said that was kind of how you felt about it.
Yeah, I mean, like what Dan was saying about, it felt like a Russell T. Davies episode, the way they landed and how everything looked, it just felt really familiar, but still had that little twist to it. And yeah, the Fez is a nice touch. I mean, even casual viewers kind of know about the Fez. You know, you think of Max Smith and it's the bow tie and the Fez, you know. There was just enough little nod back. And I love the little name drop. For once, I didn't mind it. I mean, the other name drops, you know, I could have done without them, but it fit the moment. You know, they were talking about Wasp Nest. And it, again, it was just a nice little tie-in. Yeah, it really made me smile, actually.
Yeah, Dan, now, with this connective tissue, there's one thing that was seen in this episode we haven't seen for a while, and that was the psychic paper.
Yeah, I love the psychic paper. I really miss that, too. I'm a big fan of the psychic paper because it doesn't... It saves time, and it's one of those little things where Doctor Who doesn't get bogged down with the things that slow down normal drama. And okay, there probably haven't been that many instances where she'd use it in the past couple of months worth of episodes. But I'd rather see the psychic paper than that sonic screwdriver waved in the air every 3 or 4 minutes. So yeah, that was a big relief. Wasn't as keen on the Fez as you guys. I'm finding that already in her performance over the weeks, we've had way too much sort of drawing on Matt Smith and David Tennant rather than too much original from Jodie. So I think on paper that was a nice touch. For me, it's all Again, she's not standing on her own 2 feet. So maybe when I go back in a few years' time and view that episode isolated, I won't feel quite so strongly about that. But it was certainly nicely done. It was part in service of the story, which is how those things, ideally, how those things should always be. And at the end of the day, the general audience will have loved it, will have responded to it, and it will have, I'm sure, dragged some of them back on board as much as it is me. You know, I've struggled with it over the last few weeks, but yeah, this is exactly what I needed, and pretty much just in the nick of time.
Yeah. Now, one of the big things with this season, too, we had that big trailer at the end of the season premiere where it showed all the guest stars that were going to be in this season of Doctor Who. And it continues this week as we are joined by two pretty faces, pretty well-known, too. I know the British audience, especially in Lee Mack and Julie Hedemslow. And they both played pretty key roles in this episode, as well as the other guest actors. Again, this is something I noticed with this episode. As we talked about with last week's episode, a lot of real good balance with the cast. Everybody seemed to have a moment. And the question I guess we have is because we've had so many guest stars this week, especially for you two with being faces that you guys are a lot more familiar with British television and movies, is it getting to the point where it's becoming too much or it's becoming distracting, Dan?
I don't think so. Not in this instance, and certainly not yet. I think that with these two actors in particular, I mean, Julie was in Coronation Street for a very long time, playing a groundbreaking, very likable character, and then went on to work with Chris Chibnall on Broadchurch, the crime drama last year. So I'd have been more amazed if she hadn't have been in Doctor Who this year than if she was. She was a shoo-in, and she's a fine actress, very dependable presence, and in this episode she did sort of play against type two, nothing like the characters I've ever seen her play before, so that's cool. She's the one who's got all the media attention, funny enough, whereas you'd think it would be Lee Mack's more famous. He's a stand-up comedian, originally 20 years on game shows and touring the country as a comedian, just like Frank Skinner before. But he's also the star of quite a long-running sitcom too. He's a face that everybody recognises, and it's a difficult balance to strike. It's the Ken Dodd part, you know. And he's only in it, I'd say, Lee Mack's in this episode for say the first 15 minutes or so. And to his credit, not only did they write the part, it's clearly written to him and to his talents. But I wouldn't have objected to him being present throughout the entire episode. I thought it was very nicely done. Yeah, you know, he's no Ian McKellen, is he? But then again, in a part like that, he doesn't need to be. And as the everyman who bonds with Yaz, he's as relatable as Lee Mack is, which that's why he's been so successful as a comedian, because he's relatable. So I think as long as they cast people like this, great actors in roles that challenge them, and personalities like that, if they use them, to use them sensitively, then, you know, I never minded it in the 80s, to be truthful, where, you know, Doctor Who still people have a go about those 80s episodes with some of the guest cast. But here they, I think they pitched it just right. So I don't know who's to come next. But, yeah, it gets a pass from me, Kyle.
What about you, Sarah?
Yeah, I agree. I recognise both of the actors. And I love the parts that they did. Lee Mack, once upon a time, if you'd have said Lee Mack was going to be in a Doctor episode, I might have pulled the face. But given the amount of comedians we've had over the years, Catherine Tate, Frank Skinner, who did we have in the Highway one?
Rufus Hound was in that, wasn't he?
They have all exceeded my expectations. And I really cared about Lee Mack's character, and again, I was rather sad that he died. I would have liked to have seen him for the episode, but even though it was only in there for about 10 minutes, you know everything you needed to know about him. You know his motivation, you know his background, family with his daughter. You know, these little supporting characters that were so fleshed out, and it just seems a world away from the previous episodes. Like the Saranga conundrum. Did I say it right?
No, but we'll forget it.
The brother and the sister that you just never, you never gelled with. But here we got some really good fleshed out characters.
Yeah, unfortunately, they didn't last through the episode. It was a high body count episode for sure of Doctor Who, and it was in part to a little thing called bubble wrap. And it joins a rogues gallery of everyday household items that Doctor Who has turned against us. We got from shop windows to sat navs. Does this get old? Because I have fun with this every time they pull this off. What do you think, Dan?
I don't think it ever really gets old. I think people expect it. People look forward to it. And you do wonder what can they look to next? How inventive can they possibly be with it? So this delighted me because I thought this trope may have been all spent. And it's four marks to Pete McTighe for drawing on the bubble wrap. And, you know, this is the thing about it, the way they used it in the drama. In a sense, I mean, the way they killed people with it, it sort of made you sort of the sharp intake of breath sort of thing. Because you felt for these characters, the silliness of it doesn't really hit you until after you've watched it. You know, so I think that's when you know you're doing Doctor Who, right? And for anybody out there who has got issues, ongoing issues with any decision of Chris Chibnall, or any long-term contribution that's still going on, on a week-to-week basis, this is what's important because this is what ideally the kids will be imitating in the playground and adults may be talking about at work the next day. This is Doctor Who done right. And I don't think I'll look at bubble wrap in the same way again. It's another Red Dwarf played on this again. I've mentioned Red Dwarf the last couple of episodes running, but Red Dwarf played on this really well 20 years ago. So I've now got out of calling it a tension sheet, as it was in that, and I'll now be looking at it in a whole other light. So, yeah, again, good stuff. I'm on board. Double thumbs up.
Well, not only should we be scared of bubble wrap, but maybe we should be scared of our Amazon order, Sarah.
Yeah. Oh, they looked absolutely fantastic. Mind you, some of the postmen I get around here, they do look a little bit dodgy, actually, a little bit sinister. But yeah, it was such a simple design and it really made me think of the Smilers and the Winders from The Beast Below, that kind of look.
Yeah.
And when I saw that, I remember thinking this could work quite well, but I just hoped that they were going to be used but I never really was satisfied how they were used in The Beast Below. I think, you know, they were kind of there, but not utilised enough. So I'm glad that the robots, they did get something to do. And they were sinister. When you saw it stood in the warehouse, you know, that was classic Doctor Who. It was nice to have the rug pulled out from under my feet when you discover that they weren't the real baddies.
There's something about those fixed smiles, isn't there? There's always something about that.
Yeah, very, very much so. A little extra creepiness. You know, what? One of the things with this episode, too, that I thought was played off very well was the whole time we're thinking it's the computer system that's causing the issues and there's something going on there. And they play a plot point of the human element versus the computer element. Yet what it turns out is that the human element really is the enemy this go-around, not what we thought all along. And it's the computer asking for help. What did you guys think of that twist? Sarah, what did you think?
I thought it was a really good twist, yeah. A computer with a conscience. I don't think that's not really been touched on before, I don't think. So it was nice. You know, we have an idea, don't we, in our heads when we think this is going to go. And it was nice not to have the computer to be the bad guy. So yeah, I really enjoy it. I can see how some people might have seen it as a bit of a cop-out, but I really enjoyed it.
What about you, Dan? Because this was kind of a big... I didn't see this. I'll be honest with you. I didn't necessarily see this one coming.
Now, I did. I did see this one coming, ironically. But there were lots of points in this script, in this plot, which I didn't see coming. I didn't really know. I'd considered it. I hadn't thought that this is nailed on what this is, but I thought, well, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. And that's what another thing I liked about this episode. It got me thinking. It got me connected on that level. Just more proof that it's a great script. It's solid, solid stuff. And the whole idea of, as Sarah was saying, the whole idea of the malevolence in these sort of things that we've created that are sort of outgrowing us and turning, and they're becoming our masters. That's never going to not be relevant and potent and scary. That this is these are the themes of Isaac Asimov's work, which is, you know, I'm sure that they had iRobot in mind during this too, both as regards the script and the general sort of morality of the story. But there were certain visual aspects there that really reminded me of the Will Smith movie of iRobot from whenever that was, 15, 20 years ago, with all the kablam-em all lined up. It really, really brought that to mind. The Terminator, all those kinds of things, the whole idea of a Skynet. So the idea that one of them would recognise that something was wrong and want human intervention, or at least kindly and timely intervention. Again, so it's a Doctor Who idea, but it's not a massive concept. It's just a flip on something, a clever flip. And I mean, when I look back across the history of Doctor Who and this idea of robophobia, the episode that this reminds me of the most, I mean, there's things in New Who that it reminds me of, the Planet of the Ood in particular. They reminded me a little bit of the Ood. I'm not entirely sure why. But the story that reminds me of the most is the 1977 story, The Robots of Death, with Tom Baker and Louise Jameson. Which, Norm, if you're listening, of course you're listening, why wouldn't you be? Norman will know the Robots of Death story, know exactly what I mean. With these similar menacing robotic presence all throughout that. So, this is what Doctor Who needs to do to continue to grow. It doesn't need to be particularly revolutionary, just evolutionary. And teach us stuff, but inform us, show us different perspectives by all means, but never forget that this is an entertainment show. This is thrill of the week stuff, and people go to it. It became event TV for a reason. And over the last 6 or 7 weeks, that has been absent. Even in Demons of the Punjab, which I enjoyed so much, that has been absent. And this is just getting it all right. I don't think I can praise it enough. So again, 4 marks from me. All Doctor Who boxes ticked.
There we go. Now, Sarah, one of the things I noticed when I was watching this episode, because they're playing up big on the aspect of, oh, well, they're 10% humanoid crew, and she kept correcting herself. But one of the things they noticed, because they asked why it got like this, they talked about, oh, the minute people got into their phones and got lost in their phones, that's when this stuff started happening. So they kind of still snuck in their little political message in this episode of Doctor Who, but they did it in a way that fit well within the show. So what did you think of the what they were trying to get across with this episode?
I did notice it, and I thought it was really done well. It wasn't in your face. And we have got this fear that, you know, we're all, life's passing us by because we're spending that many time, that much time on our phones, and the all automated thing, and, you know, it is, things are changing in the world of work, and we are getting more automated, and it is a genuine concern for the future. And I just thought they played into it really well. It's very topical, but the story was so strong, and the way it was, it all just came together. It never felt, like it was in your face. it was just part of the story.
Yeah, no, I agree. And like I said, this has felt like the most complete episode of Doctor Who to me since the season has started. And again, I go back to the fact that it's not a Chris Chibnall written story. And that seems to be a difference. I think you ask people the three best episodes so far this season are the ones that either Chris Chibnall didn't write or he had a co-writer with. And I think that's quite telling. But we're going to talk about that and some other things here after we talk about all the great shows here on the Fandom Podcast Network. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Take a listen to this and learn about everything else we do here at the FPNet.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to recommend these other great podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast with the latest news, reviews, and other fun topics in pop culture. Also, Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast where we discuss all things Highlander. Couch Potato Theater, our podcast celebrating the cult classic and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. The End Zone, our podcast talking about all things current in the NFL and giving our best mediocre fantasy football advice. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast. Discoville, a Star Trek Discovery and the Orville podcast. The Hair Metal Podcast, if you're a hard rock music fan, the Hair Metal Podcast rediscovers the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. And Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, as we discuss all things Doctor Who, past and present. You can find these great shows on the Fandom Podcast Master Feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play. On Facebook, you can find us at Fandom Podcast Network. On Instagram, we are at Fandom Podcast Network. And on Twitter, at FanPod Network. You can also email us directly at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and support the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
So, yeah, this is, I think we can all in agreement, this might be the best episode of Doctor Who we've had this season. But we've still got a little bit of season to go as well. And we have a couple more episodes that are not Chris Chibnall episodes. Yeah, I don't think the next episode he writes is actually until episode 10. So I want to take a look ahead real quick. Now that we've kind of gotten a couple episodes without Chris Chibnall's writing influence, do you feel like we're almost having two different seasons to the show, Dan?
I think that's probably quite a fair statement to make. Yeah, I mean, this is episode 7, isn't it? So,
yeah.
Yeah, like I say, it can't be a coincidence. And these episodes were filmed out of order, but I think the series was conceived with the writer's room, so with this specific shape to it. I just think that somehow, It's not that the stars are all aligning by a long, long chalk. It's more to the fact that maybe the agenda has been pushed to one side a little. And we're being left with what are those cornerstones that I was talking about earlier. So, you know, going to the future, going to the past, stepping sideways of humanity, and just dialing it back for a little. Not all of those early episodes were heavy in subject matter, but they were written in quite a heavy-handed way. And I think they talked down to the audience a little bit, and the pace was way off too. I mean, I genuinely nearly fell asleep during two, maybe three of those. You know, it's nothing to do with my age. I'm certainly something to do with my age. Yeah, I would never fall asleep during Doctor Who. All I can hope is that this is a long-term change. That those were floundering early steps, and that the rest of it is going to be more like this. And we're not gonna go backwards. That's my hope. And yeah. You know, Chris Chibnall, I had a lot of faith in this guy earlier on. You know, it's I'm on record on early editions of this show. I've liked so much of his earlier work, and his earlier Doctor Who stuff never turned me off. A lot of people didn't like it. I was always They weren't exactly go-to episodes, but I thought it was sturdy enough stuff. But yeah, I'm more than happy to see Chibnall sort of step away for a little, and we'll see what he comes back with in week 10. As regards the Doctor, I think Chibnall has overwritten the part for Jodie. I'm sure it's been to help her or to help the audience because of the gender swap, which in my opinion, should never have been done in the first place. The fact that you would need to put this extra work in to try and sell it only proves my point. But he's been overwriting the part in a way that Vinay Patel and Pete McTighe and, Mallory Blackman, probably if left to her own devices, she probably wouldn't have done that either. So, we'll see. Be very interested to come back and look at some of these same questions again once we've watched all 10 of these. Looking forward to it.
What about you, sir? Do you feel like we've had almost a separation of seasons here? And are there some things that you're looking forward to, knowing we've got a couple episodes without Chibnall's writing influencing it? What are you hoping for the rest of the way?
Oh, I think Dan summed it up pretty well, actually. There's not much I can really add to it. It's definitely been uneven. I just hope that, the past 2 weeks have been such strong episodes. We carry on going in this direction. I am really looking forward to episode 8. That's the witch one. Because Alan Cumming is in that episode. I think he's playing the king. Is it James the First? He's playing,
I believe so.
Yeah. And, to get an actor of his calibre on, I can't wait to see. I'm still very hopeful. And I just hope it just carries on in this direction and Chibnall delivers. I am concerned that he is writing the final episode. I'm going to keep an open mind. But I personally would like Chibnall to go, and I would like Pete McTighe to come back. If he's not back for season 12, there's something really wrong, because I just think he's been such a delight this week.
It's a very noble thing, isn't it, to say that you're going to bring lots of new writers through the way that they have. A lot of people have been vocal that the BBC should do more of that, and it's always going to be a good thing. But making the same, being so absolute about not having any older writers back, I'm not sure how it follows that that's necessary either. So, I'd certainly like to see Pete McTighe write for the show again, and Vinay Patel. I want to see more material from Jamie Matheson, for example. I want to see Sarah Dolan back. All these people over the last 3 or 4 years who seemed like they were only just beginning with Doctor Who 2. So that's what I'd like to think, that Chris Chibnall or whoever may be looking to take over. That's what I'd like to think that Chris Chibnall's going to be doing at this point, and looking at what's working, what isn't, and sort of correct this ship for next year.
That's a good point. And I kind of look at it this way. Whenever you have the massive amount of change on anything, whether it's a TV show, some kind of franchise, a sporting team, it's all the same. It takes time for that change to gel and kind of find its legs. And I'm hoping what we're seeing in the last couple episodes is that the writing team and the creative teams are starting to gel and kind of get their feeling for it, because I think it also reflects in Jodie's performance. And I think Jodie's performance the last 2 episodes has been drastically improved over what we saw earlier on. And I haven't been as critical of Jodie as other people have, but I'm seeing more of the Doctor develop, and I'm liking what I'm seeing, and I'm hoping this is the trend. The truth of the matter is, we're not going to know until we get to episode 10 and we return to an episode that Chris Chibnall has written. And if it falls back, I think we have our answer of what maybe isn't sitting right with some people this year. So with that, that's kind of what I'm looking forward to, is I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with 2 more episodes by new, fresh writers, and then going back to Chibnall. And let's see if maybe during that experience we see where Chibnall improved or found some things. So it's a wait-and-see attitude with that. But like I said, with change, you've got to give it time. It's never going to just hit 100% out of the gate. I'm seeing improvement, and that's the big thing. So we'll see where it goes. And I'm excited for the ride. We talked earlier about, could this be where we have this season and next in this change? That's possible. Look, we only got one season of Eccleston because of issues.
Yeah.
And we were shocked by that, but it turned out the change was for the maybe for the better in this case. So we'll see what happens. But with that, I'm going to say this biscuit dispenser has dispensed biscuits out. I think we have a snowball for Sarah. I'm not 100% for certain. And I want to thank Dan and Sarah for joining us. You'll have special packages delivered to your house at some point in the next few days.
Fantastic.
Oh, wow.
Unwrap with
you know,
care.
You just, you know, what you choose to do with the bubble wrap, that's up to you.
Straight in the recycling.
And of course, that episode does come out right as the holiday season's about to begin and everybody's getting shit.
Kyle, while on that subject, all this talk about the Christmas special and running out of ideas, and I was talking to Dan about this earlier. I think it wouldn't have taken much to have made Kablam into a Christmas episode.
I think that would have been a brilliant idea. I think Kablam could have easily done, we're sending these out when everybody's ordering stuff for the holidays, you know?
Yeah, it would have been fantastic. Would have been amazing. Brilliant idea, Sarah.
Yeah, that is. Sarah gets the idea of the week for the
TARDIS. Get a gold star, or is it points?
Gold star. You get two snowballs this week.
There you go. Send that to Chibnall. This is the one you missed, my friend.
I should work for Doctor Who. That's one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with that, I want to thank Dan and Sarah for joining me on the Type 40 this week. And we will be back again here on the Phantom Podcast Network with another outstanding episode of Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, where there's only one way that I can sign off. And once again, it's time to say, Geronimo!